This is the web stream of KBOO Portland. KBOO is 100% community supported. If you have not yet become a member, go to the website kboo.fm and click on the tip jar.
You're listening to KBOO Portland. The time is 11:30. Stay tuned for Art Focus with host Joseph Galavan. This KBOO program has been made possible in part by KBOO Foundation members and a grant from Oregon College of Arts, Art and Crafts Studio School, offering classes and workshops for adults in book arts, ceramics, drawing and painting, fibers, metals, photography, and wood. www.ocac.edu/register.
Andy Warhol, let's just scream, hang him on my wall. Andy Warhol, silver screen, can't tell them apart at all.
I'm Joseph Galavan, and this is Art Focus on KBOO Radio. This week our guest is Danielle Knapp. She is the McCosh Associate Curator of the Jordan Schnitzer Museum at the University of Oregon in Eugene. Welcome to KBOO, Danielle.
Thank you for having me.
The Jordan Schnitzer Museum is quite a jewel in the state, but a lot of people don't really know what's going on there because it's off the highway. So we want to talk a bit today about exactly what people will see when they go there. One of the sections that you have right now is called New Acquisitions. So, Danielle, could you tell us a little bit about what we would see?
Yeah, great. The New American Acquisitions is a show that's happening in our Schnitzer Gallery of American Regional Art right now in conjunction with the larger summer exhibition schedule, which includes a show called Living Legacies, the JSMA at 80. So in New American Acquisitions, what we've done is looked at work acquired for the permanent collection over the last 5 years, basically since our 75th anniversary, at which time we had done a major show called Lasting Legacies, looking at treasures of our collection. So right now we thought, let's look at what's happened over the last 5 years. How has our collecting mission grown and expanded to reflect our interests, the interests of the community? And we picked some of the highlights from our American art collection, meaning not just the United States, but also Latin America. We're really trying to collect hemispherically to support many of the communities that are involved in our museum. So in New American Acquisitions, we have work on view by living and historical artists working in the Americas, expanding from sort of traditional fine art that you would think of, like paintings, prints, to Polaroid photographs, new media, including some video installations. It's a really exciting show that is a snapshot of what we're very excited about within our American art collection right now.
So when you go in the upper gallery, one of the big pictures you see is a Jim Riswold photograph, Pastili Chairman Mao.
Yeah. In our north upper hallway, we had so many great recent acquisitions that we really expanded out of the American Art Gallery. So there is work both on loan and from our collection on view in that hallway outside the Schnitzer Gallery right now. And we have an area that includes work related to Chairman Mao and the Cultural Revolution. The Jim Riswold image is a really fun image. It's bright red, shows the figure of Mao standing on a Pastili chair, this sort of modern furniture.
So, and it's like a doll.
Yeah, it's a toy. Yeah, it's a doll. Riswold's a really creative photographer, and his work has a lot of kind of play on words, a lot of jokes. And so this piece is a really strong, exciting image, and it's paired with two other works, one another recent acquisition by a contemporary Chinese artist named Ma Han, which is called Art is for the People, and it shows a ceramic head of Mao with this sort of large bubble coming out of his mouth. It's bright red as well. It's covered in these tiny figures and grains of rice, and that's next to a painting that was an original proof for one of the Cultural Revolution propaganda posters. So just in the three works on view there, it's a really interesting dialogue between the artwork and the artists.
Is that there because people are collecting Chinese art now?
Yeah, I think that contemporary Asian art's a really exciting field. Our museum's certainly very interested in studying and collecting in that in that venue, because that small corner that we're talking about actually kind of touches on several things happening in the museum right now. One of the works is a loan to or from our collection. It's kind of nice to see how the work that people in our community have been collecting kind of is in conversation with the museum's own collecting interests. So we're interested in contemporary art. We're interested in Jim Riswald photography. Other people in the area are interested in Chinese art, and everything fit together in a nice little interesting package.
Mm-hmm. There is a new American acquisition by Nina Cacciadorian.
Yes, excellent.
What's it called?
So this piece is called Accadapa Diptych. It is a really humorous piece. And if you know what she is accomplishing in her current body of work, too, it has sort of this added layer of cleverness and sort of a reference to art history. This piece is two video screens that are paired together like a traditional diptych. On which you see the artist, you see Nina Cacciadorian dressed up in sort of these Baroque-style hats and collars that she created out of paper and materials she found while on an international flight. So what she has done for this series of work is she's taken her iPhone with her on her flights, gone into the restroom on the airplane, sung along, lip-synced to whatever music was available on the flight. So in this case, it was music by AC/DC. And she's dressed herself up as sort of this Baroque personality. So you come into the museum, you see these really hilarious portraits of the artist who's singing. We have headphones, so you can hear, she's lip syncing, so it's actually, you're hearing the AC/DC music. And to see these portraits that are moving, that are making these hilarious faces, listening to 20th century music, is just really unexpected and fun.
Mm-hmm. How does that fit into other work she's done?
She is someone who is really forward-thinking and working in a lot of different new media, and she came to our attention when our director got to see some of her work while, I think, visiting in Miami. So she's someone that, because we are interested in expanding into more new media and video work, and we've really made some interesting upgrades to the museum in recent years to accommodate being able to show work like that that includes mm-hmm. sound or video elements, she was a perfect fit for our collection.
Mm-hmm. Did it used to be difficult to put a couple of screens and headphones on a wall?
Absolutely. When you have video work, you have to think about the lighting needs of the work. We have a work on view right now by another contemporary American artist in the same show named Peter Sarkeesian, which is actually a book that is an open book on which he's projected a screen to show the inside of a dictionary page. And what happens while you're looking at the work, which is under a vitrine, because it's so... His work is about giving the illusion of what is real and what is not. And so his work was so real-looking that we have to sort of create that barrier so that, because it's so tempting to want to turn the page mm-hmm. and see what might be happening on the next page. What is, in fact, happening before your eyes is a dictionary page is open on which a small figure, the artist, is actually dressed up, and he's recorded himself crawling across the pages, scribbling out words in the dictionary, making commentary mm-hmm. On the pages that are open.
It's pretty amazing. I mean, the video is so clear, and it's this tiny little man. Mm-hmm. He's obviously crawling around on a white floor writing, and that's projected onto this a real book.
Mm-hmm.
And the book has annotations. He said things about words, you know, switch these and... not bad and things like that.
Yeah.
Poorly expressed. This is a dictionary he's critiquing.
Yes. And this is the work, too, that rewards the viewer who looks at it carefully and spends a little bit of time watching it go through as it cycles through all of the changes he makes in the dictionary, because it's just very clever. And what's happening, too, there's a sound element where you hear this whistling that accompanies it. You hear it throughout the gallery, and it's kind of eerie if you're not expecting it because it's the only sound taking place. And so it's actually sort of a reference to the University of Oregon fight song. But there have been plenty of times people have been in the gallery and sort of looked around to see who is whistling behind that wall. But it's actually the artwork.
What's his name again, Peter?
Sarkeesian.
Sarkeesian. Mm-hmm. Who is he? Where is he from?
He actually, we had a show of his work at our museum, a traveling show a year or two ago that was work from over a 10-year period. He's actually from New Mexico. And he is really interesting. All of his work that I'm familiar with plays with the illusion that you can create with technology. And so some of his earliest multimedia, new media works he had done, for example, was projecting what looked like a puddle on the floor. So you looked like you looked at it and you were being fooled into thinking this was a puddle of liquid on the museum floor. But in fact, it was all created by lights.
I'm Joseph Gallivan, and you're listening to Art Focus on KBOO Radio. Our guest this week is Danielle Knapp, the McCosh Associate Curator of the Jordan Schnitzer Museum at the University of Oregon in Eugene. Danielle, wandering through, you're going to come across some Warhols, some Warhol Polaroids from the 70s. What are they all about?
Yes, those are also works that are on view as part of New American Acquisitions. A few years ago, our curator of American regional art, who has since retired, Lawrence Fong, who's a very esteemed curator, had organized a show called One Step Big Shot, which included work by both Andy Warhol and Gus Van Sant, who was influenced by Warhol, and there's a lot of similarities between the media both chose to use and what they were trying to accomplish in certain parts of their artwork. And so we acquired several Polaroids by Warhol that he had just taken at parties, at social situations, and some of the Polaroids in our collection, famous people, celebrities that he would have been partying with, are represented. So we chose a small selection of those to put on view in New American Acquisitions. And they're mounted in a really fabulous way. They look almost like film strips, and the Polaroid edges are exposed because we wanted to make sure that that was not hidden behind a mat, that you saw that they were intentionally meant to be Polaroids, to be the immediacy of that medium was really exciting to Warhol.
Mm-hmm. And these are like basically look like old couples from the 70s, like Mrs. Lebach or Lebach, or they're just kind of posing.
A lot of them have really dramatic, humorous pictures. I mean, it really was the 1970s version of people who now might go to a party and just take some fun photos and it ends up on Facebook. I mean, these were just meant to be spur of the moment, kind of documenting the social situation. And a lot of the people in them have not been identified. So we have Polaroids that are just titled Man with Polka Dot Tie. So we don't know who that man was. Andy mm-hmm. Warhol might not have known who that man was at the time, but he might have just been interested in taking that picture.
Mm-hmm. What's it like collecting Warhols? Are they ever going to run out?
I don't know. That's a great question. For our museum, that's an artist who's fun to have in the collection because it's a recognizable name. And if that's sort of something that someone is interested in and it's the reason they come to the museum, and then they see that we have a Rolando Rojas painting next to it, and that's an artist they haven't heard about, and that's their introduction to new artists. That's why having a show like this where we can do these juxtapositions of artists who are working in different media, in different times, in different geographical locations is really fun for us. It sort of creates a context that a thematic show that might have been about a different subject wouldn't have allowed us to have the same flexibility.
Right. What is the Rojas painting?
That is a painting that the name of which translates to night owls. And so it was actually a work that we had some paintings by Rojas, who's a Mexican artist, on view in the museum earlier this year. And then our director and our assistant curator, who had worked closely with him, are very interested in his work and in Latin American work. And so he actually created this painting. It's called Nocturinos. In Spanish, for our museum. So it was a gift from the artist to the museum. Shows this sort of elongated figure with these really fantastical, almost trumpet-like appendages growing around him. It has a beautiful palette, and it really sort of references nighttime. It has a very cool blue paint, and he uses sand in his paint, too. So the texture of it, if you look closely, is just really interesting to imagine what his process must be.
Mm-hmm. Sorry, was that an acquisition, or is that on loan?
That's an acquisition. Okay. So that's new in our collection. And we have a lot of Latin American artists who have recently been added to the collection who are on view in the New American Acquisitions show, as well as artists from Oregon. We have a really great painting by Ann Kutka McCosh, who was married to the instructor David McCosh working at the University of Oregon, who moved there in the 30s. We have what is perhaps her finest work called The Faculty Wives. Shows a group of women who were married to college professors in the 1930s leaving a lecture. And this is a work that Kutka McCosh gave to the Center for the Study of Women in Society in the 1990s. They transferred it to our collection. Being a museum, we were sort of a more appropriate place to care for it and to have opportunities to show it. And so that's exciting, too, to have that on view in the same space as Warhol, as Nina Cacciatorean, as Peter Sarkisian.
Can you say a little bit about the collecting base for the museum? Is it Eugene, or is it geographically? Where are the collectors?
the collectors that we borrowed from mm-hmm. Living Legacies. Well, for the companion show to having our new acquisitions on view, Living Legacies is about celebrating collectors in our region. So everyone who's represented in that show are collectors that live in the Eugene-Springfield area and slightly beyond. So we do have people who live along the coast, who live in Bend, who live in Corvallis. We have 80 collectors in that show. And so it was very fitting that doing this at the time of celebrating our 80th anniversary of the museum, that we found 80 collections. And given more time and space, we could have expanded that number two more times. There are so many great, strong collections of art in our region. And so we went to those collectors, and they were really gracious to allow us into their homes to talk to us about the art they collect, why they're inspired or passionate about certain artists or certain media, and then to let us take art to borrow for several months and put on view to share with the public. So a lot of the work that's on view in that show has never been shown publicly since entering private collection, might not be again. This is a really rare once-in-a-lifetime opportunity to mm-hmm. see most of the work that's on view that's very beloved by the people who own them and live with them in their homes.
And so these are people who keep the work up at home rather than in a vault somewhere.
Yeah, for the most part, I think that's probably true of all the collectors, because that's what we went to them and asked. We said, what work are you excited about? So the things that people are most excited about are usually things they want to see every day. So they put it in a prominent space in their home, maybe over their dining room table, or they live with it in their bedroom. They put it somewhere where they can reflect on it and enjoy it because they collect art, because they love art. And so to see it on a white gallery wall at a museum is really kind of a shocking departure from how this artwork usually lives at home.
Mm-hmm. When you move into the next section, you know, as you're walking around, you see another Warhol, a black rhino. It's a print.
Yeah, that is actually the first image you see when you walk into one of the two doors into the Barker Gallery, where most of Living Legacies, that exhibition, is located. And we just thought that was really fun, bright, exciting image to be one of the introductions to the show. The other side of the gallery, you walk in and you immediately see some great examples of Asian art from local collections. So Warhol's sort of that segue into the American art side of the gallery. And that is a work that we borrowed from someone who had originally seen Warhol's Endangered Species series on view when it was at the Heathman Hotel many years ago. At that time, she was so taken with that image that she thought, at some point, I would really like to find a copy, another print from that series. I would like to have the black rhino in my home, too. And it was several years of sort of monitoring art sales, looking at auctions, when she traveled, going in galleries. And finally she found one, and it was the right time for her to acquire it. So that work represents, in that particular collector's life story, sort of the seeking of something special and then finally the acquiring of it. Mm-hmm. A lot of the collectors we met with, we would ask, you know, what was sort of the piece that you sought for some time, or is there something you're still on the lookout for? What would you love to add to your collection? And people have a wish list. People who love art, they're always learning more about artists, being exposed to new things, and so there's always something they have there, you know, with their eyes out looking for.
Mm-hmm. And the black rhino was just declared extinct.
Oh, was it?
Yeah.
Oh, I didn't even know that. Just so it's very timely to have the work on view.
Apparently they haven't found one since 2006.
Oh, that's
terrible. So they figure it's all over for them.
Oh, dear.
Yeah, maybe Warhol was onto something.
I think so.
You have worked by Lucinda Parker in the same area.
Yeah.
Could you talk about some of them?
Oh, absolutely. We have, for Living Legacies, and because I am a curator working with the American Regional Art Collection, that's my particular area of expertise. So I really can't do justice in talking about the full expanse of what we have on view from Asia and Africa, but a lot of other cultures are represented in the collector's show. But in terms of the American section of the gallery, we have work that's broadly from the Americas, but also which is not a surprise. A large percentage of the works that people are collecting this region are by artists of this region. So I was not at all surprised, and I was very delighted to find works by Lucinda Parker and by John J. Krusen and by a lot of Oregon artists. The Lucinda Parker work we have on view in Living Legacies is a drawing called Weather Vanes. It's from the collection of Dale and Connie Mueller. And this is an interesting thing about this show, because Connie Mueller is herself an artist. She's a really talented printmaker working out of Eugene. And from another collector, we found a work by Connie Mueller that we were really interested in. So Connie Mueller is just one artist who's represented in the show as both a collector and as an artist from two different collections.
Another name I recognize was Jay Backstrand. Vestiges, I think, was the piece of work.
That's another small, really interesting, complicated drawing that's on view. And a lot of the artists who... This is another fun thing about doing a collector's show, is that as a museum, we have works by Jay Backstrand in our collection. We have a lot of large works. Some of the paintings, they're representational of his body of work, and we have in our collection. When you go and look at private collections where people are acquiring art because they have to think about the constraints of working within a budget to buy art, as the museum does too, but slightly a different budget of a museum versus a private individual in those cases, and the constraints of the space of their home, we found a lot of little treasures of a small Jay Backstrand, a small Lucinda Parker. We have a small Milton Avery self-portrait on view. It's kind of fun to see these works on this very intimate scale and know that they... You know, most of their time they spend hanging over someone's couch in their living room where they're admired every day by the family that owns it.
Mm-hmm. Sounds to me fun that you get to look at art and choose art to hang on a wall. Is it that simple? I mean, how much of the job is networking or sweet-talking collectors?
At the same time, it's both extraordinarily simple in that when people are excited about art, they're really happy to talk about it and share it with you. But it's also incredibly complex and a huge challenge, which we really welcomed, to go into so many homes and to make a selection from so many really wonderful collections. The act of narrowing it down to a checklist that's almost 300 works on loan still doesn't represent the depth of the collections that we visited and the collections that were brought to our attention as this process went on over a year and more of planning. And so absolutely it's fun. One of the best side effects of it for me as a curator and art historian is being introduced to artists who hadn't quite been on my radar. So when I would go to a collector's home to sort of do these preliminary visits, they would often ask me, well, what do you want to see? And we like to turn that question around on them and say, well, what do you want to show us? What are you most excited about sharing with us? And just as one example, and there are many others, I was introduced to the work of a Portland glassmaker named Catherine Newell through this process. We borrowed a piece that's mounted on the wall called Alone Together Quintet, and her work is just really stunning. And seeing it in person in someone's home, I just was so drawn to it. And now that's an artist whose work I'll always be especially interested in because I was introduced to her work by someone who feels so strongly about supporting her artwork.
What was the piece? What did it look like?
It was in the North Upper Hallway. It was five kiln-fired glass pieces on which little figures were painted. And so it was mounted in the hallway under a vitrine. And in that hallway down on the end away from the Chairman Mao pieces, we actually have work all by Oregon artists. So we have Catherine Newell next to a Nancy Lindberg painting, next to a David McCosh painting, Andrew Vincent. Those are all Oregon artists there.
So I like to talk to artists and curators about what music they listen to while they're working.
Yeah.
And you brought in a track. Let's just listen to it first.
Sure.
I saw you die yesterday. Your blood spilled out and washed away. Saw your spirit leap before me. Is it with it that just bore me? Do you think me cruel? Is this fruition? Am I not because of...
Danielle, what was that?
That was a song called Park Blocks by a Portland duo called Heart and Hair. And there are two artist musicians named Graham Bell and Jessica Pearson who have been making music together just over the last year. And so because they're in Portland, that particular song is about the park blocks in Portland.
Mm-hmm.
They've been playing at a few different bars around town, and I love their sound, and I've been listening to that a lot while I've been working.
Is there any chance that we'd ever play music in a gallery that isn't, you know, this tinny soundtrack from some video piece? Is that ever going to happen, do you think?
In our museum?
Yeah.
We've had opportunities to work to combine music and art several times. And a few years ago, I worked on a show of early work by David McCosh. In the opening, we had a band playing in the gallery space. So when people came to look at his work from 1930s Chicago and New York, they got to enjoy music during that time. And we have a lot of music programs that happen at the museum, bringing in both musicians from the university. Of course, that university connection, we get to do a lot with that, and then also from the community. And we do Muse Evenings, which are programs on Friday nights occasionally that bring in live bands. So music and art is a natural pairing, and we really, you know, we all have fun with that too. And we love when people come to the museum to enjoy music, because we think it's a natural way to enjoy art.
So you have quite a bit of live music.
Yeah, yeah. We have our website relaunched over the last year, and so we have an even better calendar of the events going on at the museum available to anybody who wants to look at it there. We also have an e-newsletter that alerts anyone who receives it, who can easily sign up for that on our website to upcoming programs. So we really try to let people know of exciting opportunities to come to social events and to music concerts at the museum, as well as our very busy series of curatorial gallery tours, lectures by experts. We have something going on all the time at the JSMA over the summer, too. Just because the school year ends doesn't mean that we get any less busy. So even though we're on the University of Oregon campus, you know, every day is a busy day for us with doing work that we're excited about.
You have a lecture coming up, correct?
Yeah, I have a gallery tour through the show Celebrating Oregon Artists, which is an offshoot of the New American Acquisitions exhibition, which I will be doing with the co-curator of that exhibition, June Kohler, our assistant curator. And so we will be providing that free to the public on August 7th at 5:30 p.m.
Okay. And just briefly, the Jordan Schnitzer Museum has a strong Korean collection.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And there is a contemporary Korean painter called Soo Kwok, who currently has her own show.
Yeah, this is a show by a contemporary Korean painter who's based out of Washington, D.C. currently. And this show is only on view for a couple of more weeks, so if anyone wants to take advantage of getting to see it, the time is limited. And this is work that Soo Kwok has created in response to both her experience dealing with her husband's serious illness, from which she did recover, and then also the role of prayer in healing and in her own life. And so the work is very personal and visually very interesting.
These are large canvases with holes cut in them in the canvas, so you can see through to the framing. There's often newspaper pasted over the framing, and they have titles like Healing Light number 30 and things like that.
Yeah.
Sometimes the canvas is kind of baggy. It's like falling forward, or there are two canvases, like one on top of the other. They're kind of radical in the sense that she intervenes pretty violently on the surface.
They're very multi-layered, and it's actually pages from Bibles that, not newsprint, but actual Bible verses that she's attached to the paintings themselves, sometimes then painting over it so that the words are obscured. But what you're referencing about sort of the holes into the canvases, it's funny hearing her talk about her work. She's such a delicate, very sweet person. She talks about the way that she rips through the canvas and to expose sort of the frame. And she likes when you can see through the canvas, and she paints that. And she talked about how there comes a point where she decides when the work is done, and she doesn't always know while making the painting at what point that is going to come.
Right. And that show is up until July 28th. Yeah, and it's well worth looking at, because I don't think you would see that anywhere else.
Oh, yeah, I'm excited to hear you say that. We were happy to be able to bring that here, especially because the work that we have on view in our Asian galleries is so exciting to us, too. We do have two galleries devoted to Korean art, both contemporary and historical, and so we're often changing that over with rotations of work from our very large permanent collection of Chinese, Korean, and Japanese art, as well as select loans from important institutions and collectors. So Korean art is always on view at the museum. Japanese art is always on view. Chinese art is always on view. American art is always on view. And then beyond that, there's always surprises around every corner of what else is on view.
I'm Joseph Gallivan, and you've been listening to Art Focus on KBOO Radio. This week, our guest was Danielle Knapp, the McCosh Associate Curator of the Jordan Schnitzer Museum at the University of Oregon in Eugene. thank you for coming in and talking to KBOO, Danielle.
Thank you so much.
That's it for Art Focus this week. Good afternoon.
Andy Warhol lets a scream, hang him on my wall. Andy Warhol, silver screen, can't tell them apart at all.
One, two, three, four.